It is Wednesday, my dudes, and that means it is time for another episode of the Codex Radio Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Endless Odyssey. It is August 15th, 2018, and that means this is episode 32 and part 20 of our reading of Planescape Torment. We got a real good one for you this week, folks. We get into Dakon's background a bit more and find out his origin story. I think you're really going to enjoy what I've got cooked up for you, but all in due time. Last week on Planescape Torment, the Nameless One managed to defeat Grossuk, the Black Abishai, as he agreed to do for Sebastian, and in exchange got some of his physical scars healed, so he's looking as handsome and dapper as ever. Afterwards, the Nameless One was sort of tricked by a Githyanki who offered to help the Nameless One recover his lost memories, but after agreeing, led the Nameless One into an alley where he was jumped by a gang of Githyanki who were apparently mad at him for apparently being a Githzerai ally. While he lay dying in the streets, he heard them mention an upcoming raid on somewhere called Vistrigor. When he came to, he had been found by Anna in the alleyway, who wanted to recruit him to help her get Trist out of slavery. Dakon rejoined us shortly thereafter, and after speaking to Trist at the slave auction, we discovered that she allegedly owed debt to someone named Byron Pickett that she claims to have been paid. So there seems to be something fishy going on with the disappearing loan documents that prove her debt has already been paid off. We managed to track down Byron Pickett and interrogate him a bit, but he proved uncooperative and seemed very confident that no evidence against him actually existed. Then we spoke to Dakon about Vistrigor, which was the city mentioned by the Githyanki, and Dakon seemed quite concerned. He then gave us the sixth circle of Xerthamon, where we read about the Pronouncement of Two Skies, which was an event in Gith history where Xerthamon departed from Gith, who wanted to continue the war after the Illithid had been defeated and conquer more worlds, whereas Xerthamon wanted the fighting to end so that the people could begin to rebuild. It revealed that Dakon harbors some doubts, and while discussing it with the Nameless One, indulges in some conspiracy thinking that perhaps Xerthamon did not submerge his will. Perhaps the reason he implored Gith to cease hostilities was because he had come under the control of the Illithid during his imprisonment. Clearly this weighs heavily on Dakon, but we didn't have any time to resolve it because Anna managed to locate Lenny, who is an associate of Byron Pickett, and now we are off to interrogate him and see if he can help us get Trist free. So that's where we pick up today. I now give you part 20 of Planescape Torment. Chapter 49. Lenny was a feral-looking man, ill-mannered and draped in shoddy clothes. Mousy eyes darted about, scanning his surroundings as he slunk through the alleyways. Sigilian life had compounded the burden of time's cruel weight. While his face seemed that of a 20-year-old lad, his hazel eyes ached from having seen too much. I rounded the corner to face him, and in an instant his hand twitched, as if he were hiding something. "Greetings. You must be Lenny." He looked me up and down, then glanced about. Returning his attention to me, he gave a wicked grin.
"You'd best have a good reason for disturbing me, Buck."
An undercurrent of trepidation trickled through his voice. "I have some questions." He laughed.
"I ain't no tout. If you got questions, go find one. You best push off before I have to bleed you."
"What if I told you Byron Pickett sent me?" My lips pulled back into a cold smile. posturing. It was as easy as putting on a second skin. He stopped smiling and examined me for a while. His eyes lingered on my scars, and he swallowed slightly.
Pickett, sent you? Why?
He said you could answer some questions. Lenny frowned and backed off, stiff-shouldered. A muscle twitched in his cheek, and his hand ducked casually into his pockets. I nearly missed the ruffle of cloth as something slipped from his palm.
What questions?
I'm not interested in the stray coppers that you've been clinging to your fingers, Lenny. No, I want to ask you about the papers you stole from Trist. He swallowed hard, and those hazel eyes were locked onto mine. Lenny put one hand on his hip in a nonchalant manner, but by his posturing, he was wound tight as a spring.
I don't know what you're talking about, Burke. You best be off.
I smiled wickedly. You know what I'm talking about, Lenny. Byron had you steal some papers from Trist. I'm here to collect them. He swallowed hard, and the corner of one eye started to twitch. He glanced again at the scars patterning my body, a tapestry of flesh that screamed pain enough for 100 lifetimes. His lips trembled, and he desperately tried to meet my gaze. His neck was stiff as it craned back, and his eyes clawed up along my flesh, but that was all. The alley rat couldn't even look me in the eye.
Collect them? I destroyed the papers after I nicked them, just like Byron told me to.
Really? I sneered, stepping towards him, one hand on my knife. Even if he wasn't hunched over, I would have stood more than a head taller than him. Then why are you so nervous, Lenny? Let me guess. Byron thinks you destroyed the papers, but maybe you didn't. Maybe you kept them. A little blackmail material, perhaps? He stared at me for just a moment, then suddenly turned to run.
Oh, son of a...
Just as he was about to bolt, I leapt forward to grab him. He deftly slid out of my reach and began to sidestep me, trying to slip past a sliver of space in the narrow confines of the alley. Seeing my quarry about to escape, I made another more desperate lunge. I wasn't the most agile of creatures, but I bumped him hard. Off balance, Lenny stumbled forward as Dacon burst from around the other corner, striking Lenny in the chest with an open palm. The rogue was slung backwards, boots over brain box, and by the time he landed, two punch daggers were wrapped tenderly around his throat.
Hairy little rat, I can give you a nice close shave for 2 coppers.
He yelped as the blades dug into his throat.
All right, I didn't destroy them. I'll give them to you, just let me go.
Ease up, Anna.
Nay, I think a little off the top would suffice for putting Trist through that...
She hissed. I said ease up. Give him a chance to speak. Anna pursed her lips, then sighed as she slid the blade back into her cuffs. Lenny felt along his neck nervously as I spoke. Why did you keep him, Lenny? Blackmail, I assume. Regaining his composure, he snorted and gave me a defiant look.
I kept him so I could turn stag on your boss Pickett and keep Trist off the block.
He shook his head. Blackmail my arse. I blinked. Why turn stag on him? He looked at me with some pride.
I may be a thief, but I do have some standards. I won't kill some poor sod, and I won't do what Pickett did to Trist and her husband.
He shook his head and looked away.
I told your boss that what he was doing was wrong, and he laughed at me.
So there is honor among thieves after all. I scratched my chin. Well, you'll be happy to know that Pickett is not my boss. He stared at me in disbelief.
You serious? I thought... But you said...
He watched closely for a moment, then laughed.
You gave me the peel so I'd spill the chant to you.
He shook his head and looked at me with respect.
Good job, Cutter.
I smiled. Let's go get the papers, Lenny. He shook his head sadly.
We can't. They're in the warehouse, and they're not open for business right now. Rumor has it there's some sort of management change going on, but I don't know if that's true. In any case, I can't get the papers.
He looked at me sheepishly.
That's why I haven't helped Trist myself, Cutter. I can't get the sodding papers.
I'll look into this and get the papers myself, then. Dacon nodded in approval, and Anna hissed impatiently. Lenny smiled.
Go to the warehouse and tell the clerk I'm here for a loan, and he'll give you Trist's papers. If you then tell him I gave Pickett the laugh, he'll give you a bonus.
What bonus? He laughed.
Evidence, Cutter. It'll take Pickett off the streets for a long, long time if you can get it to the right person. If there's someone in the Harmonium you think you can trust, give it to them.
Welcome to the vaults of the Ninth World. How may I serve you on this fine day, Sigilian? The voice boomed. A large stone head floated behind the counter, horns jutting from its temples and eyes lit with a pale light. What is this place? The warehouse was piled high with boxes. Crates lined the walls, metal lockers were squeezed into whatever corner would afford it, and even the crevices seemed strained with the load. Winged imps across the room, checking inventory, writing records on scrolls that looked too large for them to carry. The flap of wings set a droning sound through the air, but the voice of the Ninth World was deafening above all else. The Vaults of the Ninth World is pleased to serve as a warehouse for the Lower Ward and all the sentients of Sigil. Our motto is, when one world just isn't big enough. We provide storage space for those that have little to spare. Our prices are competitive, our service exemplary, and our courtesy to customers is known throughout the plains. There was a grin in its voice. Is this place really as big as a world? I asked. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see a milk-white tail flick as Anna rifled through some of the nearby crates. No, it's just a marketing exaggeration. There's a lot of space here, but not that much. How much to store some goods? I'm sorry, we seem to be full up at the moment. Can I do anything else for you? I looked around and furrowed my eyebrows. I thought this was supposed to be a storehouse. Well, yes. The head sounded a little embarrassed. Only we ran out of space, and there's something a little fishy going on around here, and I don't know what. The gist of the matter is this. We don't really accept items for storage anymore. It came as it always did, a distant hum that seemed so familiar, an itch at the back of my skull, a flicker at the very edge of my vision. Occasionally, these little annoyances occurred when I was simply walking down the streets or even lying awake at night, too terrified of the yawning void to sleep. But they came, always, like the pressing urge before a sneeze. It wouldn't fade away and leave me wanting this time. I seized the echo and, with will alone, began to bind the nostalgia. I'd like to claim something. And what was it you were looking for, exactly? I was looking for a large bag of coins. We have a bag of coins like the one you described, sir. I'll just need to find out one thing from you. How much was in it? My cheek twitched as I unraveled the memory. There were no shapes, sounds, or visions to it, but rather a vague intuition. Somehow, the guess felt right. 1,123 coins. With a clink of copper, an imp dropped the bag on the counter. Here you go, sir. Thank you for storing your goods at the Vault of the Ninth World. Can I get you anything else? I smiled. Well, now that it looked like I could withdraw things after all. I was told to tell you that I'm here for a loan. The head sound immensely cheered. Ooh, one of my secret passwords. Here are the papers you want, sir. Thank you. What else can I do for you? With that, another imp flew by, dropping a scroll on the counter as I rifled through the coins. Dakon unraveled it for me and read. This, he sounded satisfied, is an invoice that confirms Triss' tale. The loan was paid in full. Anna snatched it from Dakon's slim hands. We need to get this to auction quick as can be. I nodded and turned to the head. But first, I was also told to tell you that I gave Pickett the laugh. I certainly hope so, sir, whatever that means. I'm just a big dumb rockhead. Here are your papers, sir, and here. Thank you. What can I do for you? I looked the floating head up and down, rubbing my chin in consideration. I don't suppose you'd be interested in joining our merry band. Darren's eyes flitted across the page. After a moment, he sighed and then folded the document and put it inside his shirt. He turned to Triss, who had been nibbling on her fingernails the whole time.
It seems the courts owe you an apology, Lady Triss. From this moment, you are free, and I will make all the arrangements to have your status and property returned.
Thank you, Darren.
No, thank you.
He smiled at me.
It's rare an individual who will do what you have done. Now excuse me, I must speak with the magistrates. Farewell.
With one delicate hand on her breast, Triss sighed. Her eyes were dewy as she shook my hand.
You are my savior, Cutter. I will be forever in your debt.
I was happy to help you, Triss.
Thank you all.
Triss took a step as if she were about to embrace Anna, but the rogue's stern countenance dissuaded her. Triss nodded, her happiness sobered.
Whatever they had once held between them had been lost in the gulf of years. She faced me again. "You have saved me from certain death, Cutter. A slow, painful death. Please, wait here. I shall return shortly." When she returned, she was draped in fine silks, and her face had been washed and powdered. Her hair was still in disarray, but a few pins had tamed it somewhat. She wore the garb of a merchant, taking her first step back into comfort and wealth. "This is not much, but it is a well-deserved reward for what you've done." She handed me a purse. "Thank you, Trist," I replied. I resisted the urge to squeeze the bag, but the weight already told me it meant a month of good living. "No, I thank you. Farewell, Cutter." Triss smiled and turned to Anna. "I hope you stay with this one. He has a good heart. Maybe the planes can change after all."
Corvus stood at his usual station in the marketplace, the memory of a smile upon his lips. Though most drew a wide swath between themselves and the harmonium, many seemed a little less wary around him. With his head in the clouds, the harmonium officer seemed a little unfocused on his job. "Good day, Corvus. How are you and Karina doing?" He smiled broadly.
"We are doing well, thank you. I owe you for your kindness, friend."
"Do you know someone named Byron Pickett?"
At the sound of the name, Corvus frowned, and warily he nodded his head.
"Yes, I am familiar with Byron."
"What can you tell me about him?"
"Officially, nothing."
He paused for a moment before answering.
"Unofficially, he is suspected of being behind most of the criminal activity here at the market. We believe him to be responsible for the murder of a merchant named Zack. His list of suspected crimes is quite long."
"Well, you'll be happy to know this, then. I have evidence that proves he is involved in the criminal acts here in Sigil."
I handed him the papers in question.
Corvus examined the papers thoroughly, lips thinning and eyes widening more with each page. When he finished, he folded them and tapped the shoulder of another officer standing next to him. They spoke quickly, in low voices, to keep word of the evidence from spreading and alerting the moneylender. When they were finished, the other officer left with creaks and clanks of armor.
"Excellent work, citizen," Corvus said with a satisfied nod. "These documents are quite detailed in their content. I will personally see to it that Byron Pickett is taken before the courts."
"Never thought I'd be happy to hear that from a hardhead,"
Anna smirked as we left.
Dakon faced me.
"You mentioned that you know of an attack on a Githzerai fortress. Now that this duty is done, I would implore you to warn our people."
"Just what I was thinking, Dakon. Do you have any contacts among the Githzerai? Any old allies?"
A shadow crossed his face when I spoke, and his eyes dulled, and when he replied it was in a low voice, creaking with age.
"I would have you speak to one on my behalf."
I nodded, not ready to question him just yet.
"All right, if that's what you wish."
"There are forms that must be followed. You must learn the ways of the people. Know that the speech of the people has its foundation in history. All things are as a story to us. Metaphor is a tool and an inspiration to the strength. Know that when we speak of Torig's table, we remember that Torig was noted for his hospitality and goodwill. When we speak of Selkant's heart, we recall the lecherous and cruel nature of Selkant."
"I understand. Will you teach me?"
Dakon quickly taught me some of the common forms of speech as Anna scouted for a gith. A wise man was said to have wrote the Book of the Anarchs, while to accuse another of treason was to remember Vilquar's eye. It was said of generous people that their cupboards are bare. Common greetings included, "Hail, sword ringer," and "Zorkai's kin bow to you," to which one should respond, "And the traveler is pleased." Dakon was a skilled teacher, and by the time Anna returned, I felt capable of exchanging proper greetings with other Githzerai.
"Ach, I found one of your leatherskin kin round the way."
She pursed her lips. The girl seemed much more agreeable with helping me ever since we rescued Trist.
"Has a fancy blade all like Dakon's."
"All right, come with me, Dakon. You'll be able to help translate if necessary." As we neared the Gith, Dakon suddenly gripped my arm.
"I would have you hear me."
I blinked. "What is it, Dakon?"
"It is my will that we not speak to this woman."
"Why not?"
His coal-black eyes were ever placid and featureless, yet then they flashed with the familiar sharpness of a wounded animal. He always spoke so proudly of his people and their ways, but the moment we came too close to his most deeply rooted traditions or his past, he withdrew as if from the prick of a knife.
"She is a Xerth. Our wills are crossed blades. We have no common ground."
"We have no choice, Dakon. If she's a Xerth, she's our best bet to get a warning to Vistagor." He nodded and trudged behind me slowly down the street. The woman had the same yellow cast to her skin and severe features. Tattoos covered her body, and she wore a long blade at her side. Her eyes were like two small black pearls. As I approached her, they followed Dakon's movements and ignored mine entirely. Dakon gave her a slight bow, which she dismissed as well. Her voice cracked like a whip as she snapped at Dakon, the words of a Githzerai tongue piercing like a dozen daggers.
"Why do you insult the unbroken circle of Xerthamon by continuing to wear it against your heart? You are not numbered among the people, betrayer of Shrakdalor. The Anarchs and the Xerths have spoken, and their words shall be obeyed. You are not to speak your mind to me, or any Xerth."
Dakon bowed his head when he spoke.
"Will you hear this human when he speaks?"
Her nose wrinkled with her annoyed grimace.
"His words carry the weight of yours, and have the shape of Limbo's form. I will not hear you, Dakon." "He travels with me, Kina, disciple of Xerthamon. He comes to you to hear the words of Xerthamon, which you, as a Xerth, must impart. Will you hear him?"
he pressed.
"The words of Xerthamon are not for the ears of a human to be heard,"
Kina snapped.
"Their minds are not as one, and they bring division wherever they travel. This one wears a shirt of scars and blood, and he travels with a traitor. Bilquar's heart beats within your chest if you ask if I will hear him."
My eyes widened. "Bilquar's heart? Dakon?"
"Will you close your mind to his words? Know your words before you speak your mind, Kina, Xerth of Xerthamon. I will not hear him. He will hear me. That is sufficient."
Dakon bowed. The Gith woman turned to me, her black pearl eyes glinting dangerously.
"You are not known to me, but your trappings speak ill of you, human. Your body is a book written in scars and blood, and you walk in the shadow of a pariah that claims to speak for Xerthamon himself. Speak your mind."
I ignored the castigation and bowed in the hopes that I might calm her. "Greetings, sword ringer," she hissed in irritation.
"Your pleasantries are as dust. The sign of morning draws near. Time is short, human. I would know your questions. Then it is my will that you leave."
I gave Dakon a quick glance and then turned back to her. "What did you mean when you said I walk in the shadow of a pariah?"
"You walk with a pariah, and you know not his history? He is quick to speak other words, but of his history he has remained silent. Ask him of Shrakdalor, of the fall of a mighty fortress to the Githyanki, and see what his divided mind reveals to you. Ask him how he speaks with Xerthamon's words, but his Kerak is as mist."
Though her eyes met mine, Kina was speaking past me. Each fierce word was slung like a barbed arrow, and with each successful strike, Dakon's eyes became more downcast. His skin seemed to pale, and his Kerak blade became ash gray. A chill snaked its way along my spine, and my heart seemed to stop. In that instant, I could see my eyes mirrored in his own, my deepest wish echoed back and the sigh of his blade wicking the air. Dakon wanted to know himself again, but he also wanted to die.
"It is not Xerthamon's words that lack conviction."
His voice was quiet but firm.
"It is their echoes that have been distorted."
Kina was just as resolute.
"There is no doubt how Xerthamon's mind is spoken. Generations of Xerth are as Rakma's jewel, of one mind on this matter. Your stance carries with it a divided mind. The doubt is yours, an echo cast from your own faithlessness." "Your words speak not the mind of Xerthamon. They are shaped of angles and hate, as if molded from Gith's mind itself,"
Dakon murmured. It was a whisper that resonated more than a battle cry, one that bent the ear toward him in its softness.
"You shall lie with the dead of Shrakhtalor in shifting chaos, for you see all with Vilquar's eye. Your mind is divided, your Kerak weak,"
Kena howled. Like a bolt of lightning from a clear sky, both Xurth whipped free their blades, each flowing sword keening as they cut the air. I leapt between the two. "Stop this! This is madness! Are you two going to repeat the pronouncement of two skies?" Dekon spoke to me without breaking the gaze he held with Kena.
"Hold fast, and do not stand in the way of our blades."
"Dekon, I order you to stop this." Dekon reluctantly lowered his blade, chastened. Kena stared at him incredulously for a moment, and then a sharp grin split her features.
"The truth at last. Your mind is not divided. You are a slave to this human. He speaks with an anarch's authority to you, and you listen.
Your mind is cast in Gith's mold, Kena," he repeated quietly.
"I will not slay you like the dog you are. No, live, Dekon, traitor at Shrakhtalor. Live like our ancestors did under the heel of the Illithid filth. I pity you,"
she said coldly. "Oh, shut up, Kena," I yelled. Several passers-by had crowded around us by now, whispering and eager to see some bloodshed or to witness the harmonium dragging off a couple of Gith and a nameless burn victim. "We came to you with open arms, and all you can think of is to thrust a blade between them. We came to warn you about Vistragor." The humor melted from her face immediately, and Kena looked at me.
"How did you, who walks in the shadow of a pariah, come to know that name?"
"A group of Githyanki are planning a raid on the fortress within the 7 day. Murmured the plot right over my bleeding body as I lay in the streets when they thought I was dead. They're on their way there even now." I had never seen such a look of shock on a Githzerai's face before. Abashed, a pale orange blush rose to Kina's cheeks, and she stepped back, sheathing her blade before she pressed her hands together and bowed deeply.
"You speak the truth. I apologize humbly and seek your forgiveness, stranger. Know you have my gratitude. You and this Xurth. Know this shall not be forgotten."
She turned to Dekon, and this time regret sheathed that steel-cored spirit of hers.
"And know that this will not atone for the fall of Shrakhtalor. The Anarch's verdict stands still."
She turned and rushed off to relay the message, and slowly Dekon slumped to the ground with a deep, tired sigh. "Dekon?" He didn't say a word, pausing instead for a moment before soberly rising back to his feet and sheathing his blade. His eyes did not meet mine as I thought ahead to our next destination. We slowly turned toward the south to find Lothar, the Master of Bones. Chapter 50. Light filtered through the multi-hued slivers of glass set in the window, lighting up the broken-down hut in half a dozen colors. Like a ruined cathedral, it held an ephemeral sort of beauty, and for a moment I savored it in childlike awe, watching a single mote of dust drift among the rays, first blue, then red, then violet as the night. Anna hissed and nudged the grim ladder with the toe of her boot. The way down was paved with death. Bones from dozens of creatures, picked, boiled, and polished clean so that they shone with colors pooling at the edge of the purple patch. Each handle was clammy at my touch, and the parlor beneath smelled earthy and ancient as a tomb. We descended in grim silence, and with each step I grew more anxious. There was power here. I could feel it thrumming in the air and ringing in my soul like a glass struck with a silver spoon. The chill of the grave kissed my skin, lapping away pinpricks of nervous sweat like the tongue of an old lover that had been spurned for too long. Long-faded memories lay buried here. It was a tomb for dead dreams. We must have gone down 10-15 feet beneath street level when we reached the parlor proper. Dozens of shelves lined the walls of Lothar's home, and on each shelf sat hundreds of skulls. Many were humanoid, a few were twisted and feral, a cross between the bestial and the demonic. I could even pick out the angled jawlines of a few Githzerai skulls. In one corner a cauldron bubbled, and on the work table beside it sat a batch of severed heads that had yet to be cleaned. The fire offered little heat, and by the time that smell of boiled death reached me it was already cold and impotent.
Chief?
A frightened but familiar voice whimpered.
Mort?
I scanned the shelf and was drawn by the familiar twitch of his hazel gray eyes.
Thank the powers you're here, Chief. Get me out of here.
I blinked and reached up. Damn, top shelf. I'd have to get a stool or...
What are you doing up there?
Those were-rat vermin nicked me and brought me here. Come on, boss, we gotta get out of here. This place is bad news.
Why don't you just float down? I growled, and motioned to Dakon and Anna to help me drag an adjacent ladder over.
I tried, Mort whispered in a quiet panic. Look, just get me down before...
Gray smoke drifted along the floor, and in a moist crack that sounded like splintering sinew, a withered old man stepped forward. His face was weighed down with wrinkles. A long gray beard trailed down his chest. Lothar's robes were the color of old blood, and one hand was curled around a curved staff rattling with several skulls. His eyes flashed with power as he addressed Mort.
Have we visitors, Skull?
I pulled myself away from the seat and placed myself between Lothar and the shelf.
Oh, no, Mort whispered furiously to me. Do not offend this blood boss. He'll deadbook you faster than you can spit.
Should I worry about that? I muttered out of the corner of my mouth. The old man ignored Mort and pursed his lips a moment before he spoke.
Greetings, traveler. Who might you be to enter Lothar's humble salon without invitation?
You've kidnapped my friend, I growled. Give him back. Now. His eyelids crept up at my tone.
Kidnapped? Your friend? I have done no such thing. Where is this friend?
Mort spoke up. His voice sounded miserable, scared, and deferential with a whine, that of a dog that had been kicked too many times. It was obvious that in Mort's opinion, this Lothar character was no one to cross.
He means me. Look, sir, just let me go and we'll let this go. Water under the ditch, eh?
I did not give you permission to speak, Skull.
Mort quailed under Lothar's grim voice. His lip curled into a cold grimace.
You stride into my parlor, arrogant, with chest bared. While others grovel and plead for supplication, you have the gall to demand of me as I stand in my home. Just for that, I should tear your soul asunder and grind the last scraps of your dying consciousness beneath my boot.
He glanced at Mort.
However, the skull you speak of has been a thorn in my side the full day it has been here. Standard spells have been impotent in silencing the thing. It pesters me.
Ah, sounds like the skull all right.
Scarred one, if you wish the skull back, you must fetch me a skull of greater value from the catacombs below. I will not bargain for something that is already mine, accept or not.
He was never yours, or anyone's, to begin with. Your men stole him off the streets.
Your ignorance is astonishing, he scoffed. You truly know very little about very little. Now, fetch me another skull to replace him, or say goodbye to your friend.
Just let him go. Lothar's hands tightened on his staff.
The skull is mine. If you press the issue, I will take yours as well.
You can damn well try.
Boss, don't push it. Let it go,
Mort yelped. Lothar nodded.
The skull speaks wisely. Heed it.
I growled, but Mort might have been right. He was shifty, annoying, and an impressive liar, but I could feel the power rippling from Lothar in waves. Very well, then. How do I find a greater skull?
Move aside the seat in the center of the room, and pass through the portal on the eastern wall and the chambers below to get to the catacombs. The portal will remain active for your return. In the catacombs lie many skulls. One of great value lies within the interred crypts of the Dustmen, beyond the Drowned Nations. Bring that skull to me, as my were-rat minions have failed to do, and I will see to it that your friend is returned to you. Perhaps I shall even answer some questions for you.
I shrugged nonchalantly. I've been to the tomb you speak of. It's empty.
What is the meaning of this?
Lothar hissed in frustration, and I took no small measure of delight in savoring his consternation.
The tomb was so well trapped, so well defended from scrying magic that it was a challenge even for me. There must be some explanation for this, and he drew out his words angrily and slowly. You will provide it to me. Go through the portal in the chamber below and seek the answer. I chuckled. It was my own tomb. Your tomb? Your tomb? He eyed me carefully, and for a moment I gulped, thinking I had spoken too much. The man might just have the magic to tear my skull free and keep it polished and picked clean on his mantle. We shall investigate this more carefully. Fetch me another skull, then, as you seem attached to yours, and we shall see what answers I can provide. Our agreement shall be as before. Do not try to deceive me with just any bone, either. I am something of a connoisseur. Return when you have something of value to me. I sighed in relief. The caverns below Lothar's residence were rank with the smell of old filth. The scent was sharp, like a foul-aged cheese in a cold basement. Mildew-yellow stone undulated in crests beneath my feet so that the hard sole of my boots seesawed between the peaks and troughs with each step. I should have recognized the stench of were-rats. It leaned against a support post for a small bridge. In one hand, it held a skin of wine with streaks of blood marring the leather. It had likely been looted from some poor sod that had crossed the creature's path. Finishing off a deep swig, the were-rat wiped its muzzle and looked at me with feral red eyes. There was a cunning danger about it, and the voice that issued from its mouth was oily and insinuating.
So, a biped comes slinking into the nest of Lothar's servants. What do you want, man, and where do you intend to go? Step lightly, intruder, and speak the truth to Mantuak.
Dakon's hand rested casually on the hilt of his sword, and Anna crossed her arms, looking remarkably casual, while hiding the fact that she was ready to pull out her daggers. I stood bold enough to seem a threat, but not so haughty as to be issuing a challenge. Who are you?
I am Mantuak. I am the voice of many as one, and the emissary of Lothar, Master of Bones. I speak here, and you answer. What do you want here?
I cocked my head. You work for both of them? Doesn't that test your loyalty?
And why should it, The Master knows the secrets of power, and the many know the secrets of the city. Perhaps someday I shall play them against each other, and become the greater for it.
A sharp buck-tooth grin split his features, and I knew that this were-rat was more treacherous than all the others I had come across.
Many as one see many advantages in such an arrangement, and the conversion of the buried village dwellers can help to extend the reach of Lothar and many as one. All benefit, yes? Now, what is your purpose here?
We're on a quest for Lothar. He needs a skull retrieved. The ratman ducked his head at the mention of Lothar and hissed at us.
Send a hairless one to do the job of the kin? Impossible!
I shrugged. Nonetheless. Mantuak hissed at me again.
Begone, then, and return when the skull is in your hands.
He paused and looked at me suspiciously. I could feel his simmering hatred burning into my back. I never thought I'd have to crawl through this dank maze again. At least I had someone to fill the silence other than Mort and his yammering. So, Anna, tell me a bit about Farid.
Old Stuttercrutch. He's me da. Well, not me real da. He found me when I was a wee girl.
Anna shrugged.
He needed a collector to crawl into places the rest of his fat gillies couldn't squirm, so he took me under his crutch.
I nodded. I didn't think you and him looked much alike anyway. Anna's eyes narrowed, and her tail began to lash back and forth, stirring up small clouds of grave dust.
And what do you mean by that, then?
I meant that he doesn't look much like a tiefling.
Aye, he doesn't. And if you knew one thing about tieflings other than what you've heard from any half-grinning hiver on the street, you'd have the sense to know that none of us tieflings look alike.
She shook her head.
No hope for you, that's for dead sure.
I didn't mean that as an insult. You both look so different. I mean, Farid's so...
ferret, and you're not.
Oh, and now what could have tipped you off to that? Me hair? Me skin? I can't think of anything else.
Anna slapped herself lightly on the forehead and then sneered sarcastically.
Maybe it was the tail. Oh, aye, that might have been it. You're so much sharper than I am, Yar, a real gem.
What in the hells is your problem? I scrubbed my fingers through my hair in frustration. I could feel the heat flooding my face as my voice rose. I make a simple statement, and you twist it like a dagger.
A dagger's a dagger, so it is.
The flick of her tail accented the snap in her voice. All I was saying is that you and Farid look nothing alike. The two of you don't have much in common. It's hard to see any resemblance between that ugly, stooped, greedy-smelling gutter troll and you. Anna's face flushed a deep red, and her coarse brogue grew to a fiery hiss.
Oh, is that so? And how do you see that?
I've eyed Anna. I'll readily admit it. For the most part, it was a matter of paying attention to her hands and worrying whether or not this firebrand was about to sucker punch some poor Burke or unsheathe her punch daggers. But it was hard to avoid noticing her confident poise, the self-sure quirk of her obsidian lips. Flame-red hair framed a face begemmed with sharp green eyes. The curves of her alabaster flesh were held in delicate rein by tight demon hide. Anna was water when she moved, possessing a feline grace that other girls could only ever clumsily feign. That fluid sway of her hips was natural to her, and it drove her body like the flame in the heart of a star.
I think you're pretty,
I snapped. Oh, brilliant. Anna just stared. So, that's all I meant, I stuttered, when I said you and Farid look nothing alike. Anna nodded, still staring at me. She didn't even blink. I looked around, and Dakon had discreetly scouted ahead of us. Anna suddenly leaned in, and clasping her hands around my head, she pulled me close, biting me sharply on the neck and giving a soft hiss. Rather than pulling back, she pressed closely into me and whispered into my ear,
"Do you fancy your chances?"
Her tail began to lash slowly back and forth, but the rhythm was much more hypnotic than angry. I could feel Anna's heart beating fast in her chest and the color rising into her cheeks. Her skin was smooth and soft against mine. The tight embrace she held me in was pressing the heat of her body into mine.
"I want to tell you something, and you can't poke fun at me."
I licked my lips.
"All right. Do you know? I like the way you smell. Oh, aye. It drives me barmier than a chaos man, it does."
She sniffed up the side of my cheek and gave a low, eager hiss.
"I see the way you look at me, and I like it. You've got hungry eyes, you do. It makes me afire."
My breathing quickened, and my jaw fell slack at her caress. Slim fingers traced white-hot lines across my flesh, searing an electric tingle along my scars.
"I want to bite you, soft-like, round the neck."
She teased the side of my neck with her teeth, never breaking skin, and with every whisper I could feel her breath along my ear. Her hand slid up around the back of my neck and tightened, and I could feel her nails digging sharp crescents into my skin. I gasped, the pain sobering and drawing me out of that lusty haze and into Anna's grip.
"I want to drag me nails around the back of your neck and force you to kiss me."
"Oh, powers above," I whispered.
"Do you know, I can smell you from 50 paces. That smell of formaldehyde pouring off you like one of them dusty shamblers. Maybe if you cleaned yourself up some, you'd be a right prize."
Her eyes flashed.
"I'd make passion with you so hard you'd be knocked off the spire."
Anna stepped back then, her tail flicking lightly against my leg, and gave me a hard stare.
"So, do you fancy me?"
"Oh, what the hell?" In a flash, I wrapped my arms around Anna's lithe form. Her eyes widened in surprise, and before she could squirm free, I wrapped my lips around the nape of her neck, grazing my teeth along her firm lily-white skin. I milked a gasp out of her as my tongue raked along her flesh. Anna tensed suddenly and hissed. Pushing my shoulders and clawing like a cat, she tore away from me,
I was only teasing you, you scarred vampire. Leave off.
Despite her protests, however, her face was flushed and she was breathing heavily.
And wash your mitts next time.
She crossed her arms.
You're making me red, yar.
Standing there sobered, I blushed. The air in these halls was colder than I realized as they lapped the lingering warmth from my skin. You bite me, I bite you, I grumbled. If you don't like it, then don't do it.
I'll do what I please, so I will.
Anna sneered. She still seemed to be a little flushed.
You just keep your mitts off me, you hear?
So many skulls,
Anna sighed. She sounded a little louder than normal, a little bolder, as if she were forcing her voice to sound casual.
And he needs a bone box that's special, like finding a gem speck in a desert.
Surely a skull that would meet the Bone Master's needs could be found in these grim halls,
Dacon intoned, running his hand along a coffin. A touch of annoyance laced his voice. He knew that something had happened between the two of us, and knew that that was why Anna and I maneuvered to keep him between us.
Hundreds of the dead, each unique among the rest.
Aye, 100 flavors of dust there are. You just don't know. All the wealthy bubbers have private tombs. Some off a sigil in the outer planes. All that are buried here are muddy hivers and lost souls.
I nodded with a grunt, trying to focus on the matter at hand. Reaching out with the story's bones tell discipline, I could hear the sighs of plebeian pasts. All the bones that lay here had struggled under common lives, and the old creaks of that burden echoed through each body even after it lay down, fatigued and weary, for the only true rest these poor souls would ever find.
Besides, most of these coffins have been overturned and looted. I've waited about in here before. After a scrape or two with a ghoul, I slunk back out.
Anna's lip curled.
What do you hope to find here?
Nothing. That's why we're headed to the Dead Nations. I pointed down one long hallway that branched down from our path. At the end stood those old iron gates. I strode down, pushed them open with an ominous heavy creak. Anna tensed at the sight of dozens of undead toiling to keep their nation of bone and gauze intact. There were skeletons replacing old tiles in the mosaic floor and dusting the walls. Zombies pushed desecrated bodies for rewrapping to preserve their quiet dignity. Ghouls had half-eaten were-rat corpses slung over their shoulders to present to their brethren. Their mouths and claws were bloodstained, and their eyes seemed sated, if only for the moment.
Come along, I beckoned to Anna. It's safe. They won't hurt us.
Her eyes were wide as saucers, but she slowly approached and padded silently behind me.
Ah, the manling returns, Acost hissed. Bold as brass and proud, and so succulent.
Standing face to face with her, I squelched the small giddy urge to spill the secrets of the Silent King. He's dead as a doornail, I'd say with mixed glee, and loose the ghouls against the rest. I would never betray Stale Mary or Hargrim, of course, but it was strange how such secrets could tickle at the back of your mind. You have your offerings, I growled, pointing at the were-rat corpses that lay at her feet. Small dead cranium rats had been added to the pile. Now leave us be. We wish to speak to Hargrim. The old skeleton priest stood in the central chamber, proudly watching over his people. But he turned when he saw me approach, and a timorous flicker in those cold eye sockets dulled his regal edge. Perhaps he'd felt the same temptation before. Greetings, Hargrim. We seek your aid. His eyes seemed displeased at my return, but he forced his voice to sound sincere.
Thou hast returned, and to what purpose, I ask? There is nothing for thee in the Dead Nations.
We're in need of a skull, one that is unique, its history and life of value above that of common citizen. Hargrim's finger bones tightened on his staff just a little.
I care not what thy purposes are, but this one will not allow the desecration of placid graves for thy selfish purposes.
I have to do so to save a friend. The chattering skull, remember? One of your own?
Dost thou speak of the one who vexed the fair female zombies of our nation? The one who pestered them as they toiled, and invaded their skirts with greedy eyes and a slavering tongue?
Oh, good, you do remember. The crack of his staff against the tile sent a thundering boom through the halls.
Thou hast done much for the good of our great nation, Nameless One, but such is not an excuse to commit a crime against the heart of the dead nations.
I bowed, somewhat abashed. I'm sorry, Hargrim. I know it was too much to ask. I'll leave you to your duties now.
What now?
Dakon said, looking up at me. Well, now all that's left is Stale Mary, unless you'd like to try talking to the Silent King again. When you watch the elderly walk the streets, backs hunched and faces sagging, you know they have little time left. Each old crone was a withered flower waiting to shed its last petal, and any day you'd expect to hear word of her collapsing and whispering her last breath. Each day that ticked by, one closer towards that half-expected tragedy when you'd have to begin mourning, missing the matronly touch of their hands and the softness of their words. It was how I felt towards old Mebeth, who healed my hurts and taught me the art. So it was strange to think that matronly Stale Mary, mending her shambling charges and laying the sleeping ones to rest, could potentially outlive you.
Greetings.
It's good to see you, Mary, but I come on a dire quest, and I hate to ask this of you. My companion's been kidnapped by a powerful man who demands a greater skull for my companion's release. What should I do, Mary?
Who?
I sighed. It's Lothar, Master of Bones. She stood swaying there as if in a daze before she spoke again.
I know him. Powerful. Dangerous. Hold skull, friend.
Yes, Mary. I know I can't take any of the skulls in these catacombs, but I need your advice. I need to find a skull that would be fitting for Lothar. She stood silent, gazing past me. For a long moment, Stale Mary seemed to consider the problem, and finally, with a slow, careful nod, she gripped her head in both hands.
Take my skull.
I was aghast. Take your skull? But that'll kill you. Mary slowly shook her head side to side. Her splitting lips formed what might have been a sad smile.
Kill? No. I'm already dead.
Her hands remained at her temples, awaiting my reply. I pressed my hands against hers, parting her arms. No, Mary, I just can't. I'll find another way. Mary nodded.
You have a kind heart.
It was such a simple solution standing right in front of me, but how could Stale Mary have thought that I had been able to bear it? Did she think it would have just been one more regret set atop the pile? One more scratch along the pillar? We had limited options, truly. We could take one of the lesser skulls and hope that Lothar finds it fitting somehow, or steal a choice one from the mortuary if we could somehow get past the guards. There was murder, or perhaps even switching out the Silent King's skull for another. I cringed in disgust at the thoughts, so cold, calculating, and practical. They flowed through me as if they weren't my own.
Suego,
Mary gurgled. I blinked. The ghouls. I thought they'd destroyed the body. She shook her head slowly.
Not all. Hargrim used it as a warning to never harm the dead nations.
I almost kicked myself for not thinking of it earlier. I would be in your debt if you could help me. I think Lothar may accept that as a solution. Mary nodded and trudged off to speak to the Triumvirate. Chapter 51. With Mary gone, there wasn't a whole lot to do but sit and wait. We sat in the same guest room / cell where we had spent our time in our last visit. My mind had been full of questions ever since we talked to Kina. Questions about Dakon's past and the weight of it which seemed to burden him more and more. We need to talk. The words came, unbidden, with the solemn weight behind it heavy on my heart. Dakon looked up at me, and caution swam in those coal-black eyes.
What is it you wish to know?
He murmured, but in those eyes I could see that he already knew the question. It had hung over us for too long, swinging like a sword dangling over the head of a long-forgotten king whose name had been lost to the aeons. When Fel was describing the tattoo on my arm, you said you knew the symbols. He was hesitant when he spoke.
The symbols speak of four you have traveled with in the past.
I nodded. Those words echoed that of the old fish merchant in the hive who had seen me once long ago. Something sounded in the back of my mind. The murmur was nearly inaudible, but it felt like a dozen flies were crawling in my skull. What can you tell me of the four? Dakon's eyes took on a faraway gaze, staring through me and into a life long ago, when another incarnation had walked in my skin.
The woman was young. She worshipped time, for in her blood she knew of things to come. The archer was a blind man, and he could see things that no other one could see. The path of his arrows always led to the heart of an enemy. The familiar and the slave I know little of.
See things to come. The woman's name was Dianara, wasn't it? The name on my lips brought the memory of her back to me, an azure gown rippled by an unfelt wind, and crystal blue eyes bright with unshed tears. Her hair was white like the foam of the sea. Her pale lips were pursed with the need to whisper my name, and trembled with the sorrow of not knowing it. Dakon nodded.
Know that Dianara was the name she carried.
I felt cold. What do you know of the archer?
I know little of him. I know he was a soldier. I know that alcohol had taken a portion of his life. In blindness, he had come to know a different sight. In knowing this, he had become strong. Yet he did not know his own strength.
Do you know what his name was? Before Dakon could respond, I suddenly knew the answer. The crawling sensation in the back of my skull returned, and I felt the name surfacing as if from beneath a great muddy ocean.
Know that Zachariah was the name he carried, and know that his name pierced the hearts of many enemies.
And which one of them was you, Dakon? Were you the slave? Dakon was silent for a moment, and the surface of his blade swims as if in turmoil.
Know that this one owed you a service. In owing this to you, it became as slavery.
It was at Tractalor, wasn't it, Dakon? The name was hissed by Kina, who spat it out like it would have cursed Dakon to the bone. Dakon was silent again, and when he spoke, his voice trembled and old wounds were reopened.
No, it is the place where I died my first death.
What is that place?
It is one of the great homes of the people. It has suffered many wounds in its life. One of its scars is by my hand.
With each mention of the city, my scalp crawled. I fought off the urge to run my hands through my hair. How did this come to be?
Know that the tale is long. The matter is between me and the other that was once you. Know that if you hear it, know it shall be a long tale.
I would hear it. Dakon sighed and ran his hand along the wall beside us. His fingers caressed the blue-gray stone, trying to conjure up old memories of his ancient homeland. He spoke, and it came in a quiet intonation. I found myself leaning forward, eager to catch every word.
Upon the rolling plain of Limbo, the people shape cities from the chaos with their thoughts. Know that there is no place for a divided mind.
Dakon raised the blade from his shoulder and held it before him. As he stared at it, it sharpened until it was almost as thin as a piece of paper.
A divided mind is an unfocused mind. A divided mind fractures walls and weakens stone.
As Dakon spoke, the edges of the blade corroded slightly, the metal misting and melting along the edges.
Many divided minds may destroy a city. Long have I known the words of Xerthamon. Through my voice, many have come to know the words of Xerthamon. The Xerth protect the community from all threats, whether to the body or the mind. They are the guiding stones in the chaos. So it came to pass that I spoke the words of Xerthamon without knowing the words of Xerthamon. It came to pass that I no longer knew myself.
So you doubted the words?
No.
Dakon's voice was edged, and his blade sharpened in response.
I knew the words, yet it came into my heart that perhaps others did not know the words as Xerthamon knew them. And so division formed. As my mind became divided, those that looked to me as a guiding stone became divided. Many scores of Githzerai, many hundreds of scores of Githzerai, doubted. Shrock T'Lor died that day.
So those that followed you came to doubt the words as well, and the city was weakened. Dakon's fingers tightened on the hilt of his blade, and he closes his eyes.
The enemies of Xerthamon came. Know that their hatred of his words and the people lent their blades strength. Know that they sensed the weakened city, and they brought war with them. Many Githzerai drowned in the chaos and beneath the blades of our enemies.
Small beads of metal appeared on the surface of the blade, as if it was blistering.
Know that this happened long ago.
What happened to you?
As I fell from the walls of Shrak T'Lor, know that myself was broken. My blade was missed, my mind divided. I was adrift upon Limbo's seas, and I wished to drown. I died for days, my mind awash in division, when death finally came to me. It wore your skin, and it had your voice.
I blinked, licking my lips. The chill that ran down my spine was a cold prickle, born separate from the warm tingle in my scalp. Me?
You asked that I hear you.
As Dakon said the words, my vision bled outward, and the crawling sensation began to warm its way up through the back of my skull. It was unbearable, too powerful an urge to be denied. I felt nauseous for a moment, and my vision was suddenly as chaos, smeared, twisted, and I was someplace else, someplace in the past. I surrendered to the memory.
I have to watch my thoughts. Everything around me is in turmoil. My vision is hazy, swirling, dizzying, all at once. There is mist, pockets of fire, islands of mud, stone, and ice-covered rocks, swimming through the plain like fish, impacting and dissolving. Droplets of water arcing through the howling air and lashing my skin like teeth. I choke back my nausea, and I steady myself. This is the plain of Limbo. All is chaos. Nothing is stable. The battle had waged for days. From my perch, I had heard the distant screams, the chorus of metal clashing against metal, silver astral steel against Karak. Bodies of warriors had been pinned to the walls, which bled and melted in the ensuing discord, until stone became ice, then sublimated into buffets of wind, which scattered the corpses like rags, before coalescing into raw crimson magma, wrapping flesh and bone into an ashen caress. Smaller bodies, Githzerai children, perhaps, had been flung into the misty void, drifting like broken dolls. They had died long before the chaos could have suffocated them. I took small comfort in that. When the walls of Shrak T'Lor had been breached, when the slim barrier between order and chaos crumbled, it was not only the metaphysical substance of the realm that had flooded in, wild and fey and giddy. No, it was joined by the chaos of war. Githyanki came howling with razor-toothed undulating screams. Illithids swarmed in, armed with thoughts that pierced like lances.
The Slotty swarmed along the once pristine walls, and formless screams drove the inhabitants mad with terror, softening them up to be devoured by the ravenous blades and talons of their enemies. I am silent as I tread along the broken island, two whole blocks of the city that had broken off and had been sent floating into the misty void. Overhead, the realm of Limbo plays itself out in pretty random smatterings of transubstantial matter. Ashen snow flutters down onto the remaining streets, as if some latent psychic residue wept in lament. There is only the distant roar of chaos above, and the sandy crunch of debris beneath my boots. I walk past the bodies, the blood, the utter and absolute ruin. In a few days, the lingering psychic will of the Anarchs will sputter out and die, and slowly this island would dissolve, yielding the corpses to the embrace of mad oblivion. I stop. There he is. I focus on the dying man that lies before me. Kneeling, I examine the Xerth to see if he still lives. The survivor, if one can call him that, is a Githzerai. His body embedded in an earthen pocket that swirls around him. Unconsciously, he has formed a grave from the elements, and though bits of fire and water lick at his face, he does not respond. His hands are ashen, his coal black eyes focusing on nothing. His emaciated frame speaks of starvation, but I know it's the least of his wounds. It's faith that dealt him the mortal blow. I look for the blade he carries. In his limp left hand is a twisted mass of metal, its surface having melted around his hand like a gauntlet. As I watch, it steams and hisses like a diseased snake. The Githzerai does not seem to be aware of it, but it is that weapon that has brought me here. Dakon, Xerth of Shroctalor Drowning, last wielder of the Kharrik Blade, know that I have come to you with the words of Xerthamon, carved not in chaos, but in stone, carved by the will in an unbroken circle. At the word Xerthamon, Dakon's eyes roll back in their sockets, and they attempt to focus on me. With effort, he cracks his mouth to speak, but only a dry hiss emerges. I bring forth the stone from my pack and hold it before him so he can see. Know that the words of Xerthamon inscribed upon this stone are true, and know that your divided mind need be divided no longer. All you must do is take the stone, and you shall know yourself again. Dakon's eyes flicker over the unbroken circle of Xerthamon. Take it. For a moment, I think that he might be too close to death to recognize it. Then the right hand twitches, and he pulls it slowly from its earthen prison. The clumps of earth streaming off it become water in Limbo's chaotic winds. His skeletal hands clutch the stone, like a drowning man grasping a branch, and his eyes flash. Know that I have saved your life, Dakon, Xerth of Shroctalor. Dakon's eyes turn from the stone and flicker over me, and he hisses again, throat too dry for a moment to muster the words. He blinks slowly, then speaks, his voice barely above a whisper. But the words are what I wanted to hear. My life is yours, until yours is no more. I smile.
And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Codex Radio. I think that might actually be the best episode we've ever done. So, go work, everybody. Before I let you go this week, I did just want to let you know that I have recently opened a Patreon page for the Codex podcast. You can check that out at patreon.com/myriadtruths. If you don't know what Patreon is, I don't know what rock you've been living under, but basically it's a way for people who produce art and services of various kinds to get supported by their listeners and or users. So basically how it works is you can hop on that page, and there are a couple of tiers that you can pledge at, which basically give you some perks and access to some secret stuff that not everybody will get access to. And it's sort of a way to help finance the show without having to run ads. So if you have the time, check out the page and consider donating to become a patron. I've hooked up a few perks to the Patreon account, so if you donate at any level, even a dollar, which is the minimum amount of pledge per month that I think you can actually even do on Patreon, you'll get access to the Myriad Truths Discord server, where you can come chat with me and some of the other community members. At some of the higher levels, there's some bonuses that I've added and some other things that I'm kind of thinking of. Things like voting on the next season of the show and access to some live streams. I was thinking about maybe once a month or so doing a live stream of a recording of one of the readings. And that way you can see in all of the glory all of the various fuck-ups I make while recording these readings, which can often be quite hilarious, and I'm often quite sad that no one is around to witness them. But yeah, so check that out if you can. If you can afford to become a patron, we would very much appreciate it. If you can't, no worries. Keep enjoying the show for free without any guilt. This is just a way for people that can to give a little back and help keep this thing going. As usual, if you have any feedback for the show, we'd love to hear it. You can tweet at me at @endless_odyssey or tweet at the show's account at @codex_radio. And keep sending in those emails. You can do that at codexpodcast@myriadtruths.com. That's it for this week, folks. I'll see you next time.